This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about home improvement today and focusing in on remodeling, the whole process. Chad Spate is back with us. Hi, Chad.
Hi, Jill. Great to see you.
Great to see you, too, although it's virtual.
Yes.
Chad is the owner of Chad's Design Build, and he has many years of experience remodeling. So now's your chance to ask an expert about your remodeling plans. What questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Chad, I would imagine that you are super busy right now. Are you seeing a lot of remodels?
You know, I have to say quite honestly that we're probably twice as busy right now as we have ever been in almost 30 years of doing this. And it's really strange because there are a lot of other things going on that make it challenging right now. Obviously, we're adapting we've gotten pretty good at operating within the pandemic, but we're starting to contemplate life after the pandemic. But materials are hard to come by. There have been severe shortages, which are rippling into all sorts of project delays. And then the cost of lumber right now is 3 to 4 times higher than it was a year and a half ago. And, you know, that is creating all sorts of anxiety and uncertainty. But despite all of that, we are overwhelmed with work. So I guess it's a good thing.
Yes, work is always good. Work
right.
is always good. So when we've got people that are thinking about remodeling instead of moving, so what is the first step in the remodeling process?
Sure. Well, so if you're reaching out, if you're ready to reach out to a professional, because I think, you know, the first step is kind of thinking about what it is you want to accomplish. What are your goals? What are the things about your home that aren't quite, you know, up to your expectations, or what improvements or amenities do you lack that you would like to add? And once you kind of have that list, you're going to want to reach out to a professional, and there are a number of ways you can do that. Some people start by reaching out to a designer or an architect, and then that professional would help you to explore those possibilities. Sometimes people reach out directly to a contractor, and some types of projects, you know, a contractor will just maybe give you an estimate, help, you know, talk you through it in kind of a cursory way. And you might be able to move forward without having enlisted the services of a designer or an architect. And I'd say the third way, which is the model that our company has, which is called Design Build, you know, we're providing professional services, consultative services, design when it's needed, clarifying the existing conditions, and giving our clients an exact cost to do their project. And then they can decide, having gone through the first step of planning, what they really want to do when they renovate. You know, so there's a variety of approaches out there in the marketplace. And one of the decisions people have to make is what approach is right for them. And then in that given approach, you know, there are numerous professionals out there that could work with the client to help them figure out what is possible and what's it going to cost and, you know, what do they want to do.
So go ahead.
Well, you know, it can be daunting.
Definitely.
And yet, as we say to our clients, I mean, you know, remodeling is complicated and it can be, a little frightening to get into. And our goal, and I think this is true for any professional, the goal is to make it less uncertain, to make it more enjoyable, to help people understand, you know, what their options. People don't need to know how to solve the problem when they come to a professional. They just need to be able to communicate what the problems are, you know,
right.
what the goals are. So my goal is always to try to help people not be anxious about the process, and to help them get started so that they can, like I say, hopefully enjoy it, right. and ultimately get the things they want.
So when a person's getting ready to go to a professional, does it make sense to have a list of, you know, these are the things that we, you know, don't like and we want to change, or these are some pictures of the things we like? I mean, is it best to have all that kind of information gathered?
Sure. That's a great question. Certainly pictures are, you know, worth a thousand words, as we say. And it's true. When I have a client that we're talking to, I always ask them, you know, is there any inspiration for, you know, have you seen photos, or do you know of a home that has done something similar to what you're hoping to do? Might you be able to share some photos with us to help us understand what your vision is? That can be very helpful. Some people are more likely to have simply selected things, or maybe they describe what it is that they want. You know, they're different people. Some people are visual. Some, you know, are more likely to explain it in words. And then some want to, you know, touch the samples and things like that. And so, you know, our goal is to meet people where they're at and to help them, you know, listen to or see whatever it is they want to show us. And then we will return the favor to, you know, get their response to different photos or products. You know, what do you think about this? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? And that's often true of the home itself. When we're in the home, you know, a lot of homeowners are very good at being able to show us the things they don't like in their home, which is why we're there. But it's great to have them explain that right there in their home. And now that we're getting to the point where we're more comfortable going back into people's homes and being able to explore that and discuss those things together rather than always on a Zoom call, right. Which we do a lot of too. But, you know, that it's very helpful. And that allows us to figure out what we might recommend, because certainly the professional is going to make a lot of recommendations. Typically, they're going to show a homeowner what they've done on other homes and show them products that or features that maybe they didn't realize were out there that might be a really good solution to something that they're hoping to add.
A lot of people do ask us, in fact, Joseph in Jefferson called and couldn't stay on the line, but he wanted to know if there's a way of finding contractors without just Googling. Is there an alternative to Angie's List or some other site that can help?
Sure. Yeah, well, that's a great question. So there are a number of reputable professional organizations out there where it's good to look. So, for example, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, which is a group that I've been very involved in over the years, which stresses professionalism, education, and ethics in our industry. You know, members in that association are essentially vowing to engage in ethical business practices. And we have a process for grievances if those, you know, code of ethics are not followed. And so I think that's an excellent place to look. If there is a NARI chapter in your community. So in Wisconsin, for example, we have three chapters that serve the parts of the state, Madison, Milwaukee, and then up in the Fox Valley. And then there are members at large, but then there are other associations as well. There's I believe the Green Building Council. You can look, you know, if you were looking for an architect, you know, there's the American the AIA. I'm now forgetting the what that stands for, but it's the Architects Association, things like that, that would allow you to possibly see a subset of professionals that might share your values or your focus in a particular expertise.
What about just word of mouth, too? I mean, ask a person who has something going on. Is that a good way?
Oh, well, I'm glad you said that, because I do think that is the best way to learn about a particular contractor or a remodeling professional. You know, how reputable is their service? You know, Google, there's a lot of paid information that shows up when you do a Google search. And so you have to be a very skeptical user of those sorts of things. But when you can talk to a homeowner, particularly someone that you know personally, to find out, you know, what's the real story on this individual or this company that you hired, that's a great way to go. And I, you know, certainly for us, I always try to figure out if a potential new client knows any of our past clients, because that's the best way for me to say, oh, you know this individual. I encourage you to reach out to them, because they'll tell you what it was like working with us. You know, I mean, people are savvy, and that's great. You know, when someone hands a reference list, the odds are pretty good that all those references are going to be good references.
Exactly.
So, you know, by being able to go out and some of the neighborhood sites, Nextdoor comes to mind. I am not actually active on Nextdoor, but some of my staff are active on Nextdoor, and they tell me about things that are said about us in the neighborhoods. And so, anyway, that's a great place. I know a lot of people share things with their neighbors, and that's a good way if you don't know anyone that has done what you're hoping to do. You might go on to Nextdoor and see what you learn, because at least then you're talking to people in your neighborhood or in your, you know, basic geographic area.
What about places that sell building supplies? I know, like, there's usually a board up, or you can ask someone. Is that a good place to go, or should you be a little leery about that?
I think it is another good resource. Certainly, I would say talking to the salespeople is a really good resource. For example, you know, I remember a time years ago when we weren't very happy with the roofers that we had been using, and we were trying to figure out, you know, where could we get a new, you know, source of recommendations. And we thought, well, we're going to go to our roofing supplier, and we're going to ask them, who are the roofers that impress you, you know, that you, because you deal with these people every day. Mm-hmm. And so that has been a good thing. And I would also say that code officials, if you're a homeowner and you are, you know, let's say you've taken the initiative, you're thinking about building an addition, and you go down to your city hall and you talk to the zoning official to see what is possible. You're just kind of doing your own research. That can be a great resource. And you can even go on and look at public records at who are the contractors that are pulling permits in your area. You know, that's public record. So that's a great way to find, you know, upfront kind of professionals.
Okay, all great ideas, and thanks for that question, Joseph. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tyler Ditter is our technical director today, and Jana Rose Schleiss is our on-air producer. We are talking about remodeling with Chad Spate today. Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to the phones. And Nancy in Grafton is up. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I live in a very, very old house. It used to be the First Lutheran School here in Grafton. but it was moved over across the fields. And anyhow, it has all these wooden floors, except in the kitchen. But the old vinyl floor in here is cracked, and it needs to be removed. And I had, well, my boys are all pretty smart guys and handy. So my one son went down to the bottom. I said, let me see if that's, you know, the wood floor is under here, too. Yeah, he dug down, and he cleaned off, and he found a little patch, and there's the wood floor. But the question is, I would think it would be a good idea to tear out all this other stuff. There's a couple of layers of vinyl underlayment, but the thing is the mastic that's in there that's so sticky. How do you get all that stuff off and make it look halfway decent so it looks kind of like the kitchen floor? I mean, like the dining room floor and living room floor and bedroom floors and all
those. Sure. Yeah, Nancy, I think a lot of people have that same question, Chad. What have you found works well?
Well, so there are a couple of things that I want to say. One is just a caution that when we're tearing out old flooring, we have to be very careful. And we need to test those materials to make sure that asbestos is not in either some of the layers of tile or possibly just in the mastic that was used to adhere whatever the tile layer was down. It is very common to find asbestos in that area. So I would recommend contacting a professional asbestos abatement company that can come out and test for that asbestos. And then if, in fact, you have it, they can let you know the cost of having it removed. So that's just the first thing. If you don't have asbestos, then you're going to be looking at the quality or the nature of that particular wood floor that is underneath all of these layers. Because sometimes, in fact, quite often, we find that the wood that was put into a kitchen was a different grade of wood. It might not even be a hardwood. In the Madison area, there are a few things that I've noticed in old homes. A lot of times the home might have oak flooring throughout, and yet the kitchen has maple flooring. Well, now maple is a beautiful hardwood. There's no reason not to utilize that old maple floor, which is often buried under a few layers of the tile or whatnot. And sometimes we can remove that material. If it's not asbestos, we can scrape it out and remove the nails near the surface and potentially refinish it. Sometimes we find that there's actually a softer type of wood like Douglas fir, which is not uncommon to find in a kitchen. Douglas fir is a much softer wood. It probably is going to be significantly damaged by the process of removing what's on top of it. And it may not be in good enough shape to refinish when everything is removed. We've done it, but it's a little more challenging. The actual act of refinishing an old floor is best done by a professional, but some people are industrious enough to go and rent the equipment that is required to sand a floor like that, to prepare it, and then to, put down the sealants on top of it. The last thing I wanted to say is that if you really want a hardwood floor in your kitchen and you discover that what's underneath isn't worth refinishing or it's too complicated or whatever the case may be, you can have a new hardwood floor installed in the kitchen. And that also is something that we've done on numerous occasions. Again, that is something that's often done by a professional, that typically when a hardwood floor is put in, if it's done the old-fashioned way, the wood is a tongue-and-groove material that is nailed down, and then it is sanded and varnished in place. There are new floors that you can buy that are pre-finished. So that wood, actually, you would simply install it, and then it's good to go. So those are a variety of ways that you might be able to go from what you have to either a refinished or a new hardwood floor.
Okay.
I hope thanks that helped.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy, for the call. Now, Chad, wouldn't traditionally the reason why there was different wood would be because they would have had a linoleum just for cleaning ease? Is that why there was a different wood in the kitchen?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I'm, you know, I think part of it is that. Part of it, too, might be that certain wood is more resilient if it gets wet. So, for example, there's a logic to using a conifer like Douglas fir or pine in a wet location, because we often put that material out on a porch.
Right.
So if you put it in a room that where you're going to have water, you know, sloshing around at a sink or whatever, there's a logic to that. It's going to take more abuse, or at least it's going to take more wetting and drying. There may have been other reasons, and I haven't uncovered that in my research of, you know, there was someone, I'm sure one of our callers might know.
I'm sure. If you have a question or if you know the answer to that question that we just talked about, please give us a call. Our lines are open, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email, and that address is ideas@wpr.org. And we did get an email from Bunny from Greendale. She emailed to say they'd love to add a solarium to their house, but they've got a quote and it was way more than they expected. What is a reasonable price? How long do they last? And are there any common issues to be aware of? First of all, describe a solarium so everybody knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, so typically when I think of a solarium, I'm thinking of a structure that is mostly glass. It could be made out of wood or it could be made out of metal, the framework. And then there are many glass panels integrated into the walls and the roof of that structure. We often talk about the fact that when contemplating any addition, the most expensive thing in the wall is the window or sometimes the doors, because of the glass. And, you know, the glass is high efficiency insulated glass nowadays, and a quality window is much more expensive than the materials that would otherwise be there. So with a solarium, I would expect it typically to be quite expensive, but I'm sure like everything else, the devil's in the details. You know, the way that frame is constructed, whether or not it's a standard kit or it's something that's custom made for the home, will have a big impact on the cost. And what is done is a foundation and floor underneath this solarium will also, have a big impact. And you might see different structures ranging in cost from, say, I don't know, $300 to $700 or $800 a square foot, depending on, you know, what exactly is going into it.
Okay. And as far as how long they last, that would depend on the materials, wouldn't it?
That's correct. So I can tell you that the sorts of failures that we've seen in solariums, because I can't say that I've ever constructed a true solarium. We've definitely constructed sunrooms that have a lot of skylights in them and have a lot of windows and glass doors, but it's basically a traditional wood structure that has those glass components put into it, and there's still some roofing and siding somewhere on that structure. But the solarium, if it's made out of wood, you know, we've certainly repaired or replaced a fair number of those structures, because the frame itself, the wood or the metal frame, could start to fail. You can also see failures in the insulated glass, where you, I think we're all familiar now with, you know, a modern glass pane that has that sealed space. Once that SEAL is no longer sealed. you know, you get fogging, and you know, you can get condensation and watermarks and all sorts of things that are very problematic because there's no way to get inside and clean it. So replacing a number of the glass panels once they start to fail can be an issue. And then, of course, the third thing would be the gaskets that are where the glass meets the frame, whatever that frame is made out of. Those gaskets will often fail at some point. And sometimes it becomes problematic to find the materials that match the existing structure to restore it in a way that is both cost effective and aesthetically pleasing. So those are the sorts of things we see typically with the solarium.
All right. Great. Thank you. Thank you for the question, Bunny. And let's go to Ron in Cable. He might have an answer to that question we proposed. Hi, Ron.
Yes. Yeah, you're mentioning about why there might be a different species of wood in a kitchen. And many times, like you mentioned, in this situation, the homeowner said there was oak throughout and then maple in the kitchen. Because maple is a harder wood. And as far as removing that linoleum, once the linoleum is off, you got that adhesive. A lot of times it's black, it's a tar. You can actually take a 16 grit paper, a professional can come in and remove that with a 16 grit paper and then go up in the papers with the different grits, but you can remove that professionally.
Okay.
And also in your older homes, a lot of times you had one species of wood downstairs, typically maple, especially up in this part of the world, late 1800s, early 19, and then a lesser expensive species upstairs. So just in commenting to what you mentioned about that kitchen, why we have different woods.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Ron. So basically, they want to keep the good wood for impressing people when they come into the home is basically what they're saying, right?
That seems like a logical answer, certainly. And that is a great comment because that is certainly true as well, that a lot of times we do see a less expensive wood on the second floor.
Absolutely. So. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Ron. We're talking about remodeling, but we can take any of your home improvement questions. So give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, and we'll get you on real fast. We did have an email from Laura. She said that they are considering redoing a bathroom, and she's been told many people are going with shower stalls instead of bathtubs. And she asks if this is true, and if so, will it be a resale issue if you don't have a bathtub?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's certainly a conversation that we've been having with our homeowners clients for, 25 years, because realtors generally will tell you that, you have to have a bathroom or a bathtub in a home. And many of the homes that we work on in the Madison area, the older homes, they're often a one bathroom home. Maybe there's an extra powder room, but there is a single tub shower unit in the main bathroom. And if you, even though for many of us, we don't ever use that tub and we're stepping over the side of the tub every day to take a shower. It is true that once you remove the tub, then you don't have that tub in the home. But despite that, many of our clients have made the decision over the years to put in a nice walk-in shower that gives you a better, a bigger space to take a shower in, a safer way to get in and out of the shower. Sometimes we don't even have a curb. And the drain is installed into the floor right where the bathroom meets the shower drain or the shower floor space. And so Literally, you don't need to have any sort of a barrier. Most people do have some sort of a barrier, you know, some sort of a partial glass or still a curtain barrier, but you can have a barrier-free, curbless shower that you don't have to worry about tripping on the curb or, you know, stubbing your toe. It's much more accessible and safe to use day in and day out. So, you know, the answer to the question is yes, you can consider getting rid of your tub. And yes, there will be some people that will tell you that it's ill-advised. And I can't answer that question ultimately. If you intend to live in your home for a long time and do it for your reasons, it seems like a perfectly good idea. And I think there are enough people out there that would be perfectly happy to have a really nice shower as opposed to that standard configuration that I suspect it's not a big barrier.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for that question, Laura. I appreciate that. Let's go to Mike in Seymour. He has a question for you. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. For retrofit situations, I've heard that blown in cellulose is a pretty good option for, you know, fiberglass homes, things like that. What about foam? I've heard that, not blowing, but injecting foam into the cavities of an existing home works pretty well. And what is the, what are the details as far as what needs to happen, the cost, and that kind of stuff?
Sure, sure. It's a good question. So you are absolutely correct that the standard and most foolproof way to improve insulation in an older home, if you're going to be drilling holes and having a material blown into those cavities, is to use cellulose. It is a very effective material. As far as providing both air sealing and insulation. And it's also the most cost-effective way to accomplish the goal. Some people do utilize types of foam that can be injected, but it's a little bit more difficult to control. The foam does some expanding inside the cavity, but done professionally, it can have a good result. But because that foam is actually chemically expanding when it's in a closed cavity, sometimes it can cause a wall surface that maybe it has some structural issues to kind of blow out. Now, of course, this could happen with cellulose as well, but the installer has a lot more control when they're putting in a cellulose compared to injected foam. The injected foam does typically have a better R value per inch, but it's more expensive to have it installed. I will say that, while we are aware of injected foam, it is not something that we use or recommend for our clients. But there are times when if you have access to the full cavity, if you're able to remove one side using some foam or all foam in a cavity can be a great way to go. There's typically a pretty good correlation between the cost of these products and the R value that you get from them. Though foam is a little bit more expensive per R value, but they're reasonably close. And so, when you talk about the fact that with our clients that foam costs more, yes, that's true, but it gives you more R value per inch. And so if you have a small, limited cavity where you can insulate, sometimes that's the best way to go if you want to maximize that R value in a space.
Okay, thank you for that call, Mike. We have room for yours, too, so give us a call, 800-642-1234. You're talking about putting insulation in. Isn't remodeling a really good time to consider, making your house more comfortable, adding in new technology that will save you money, that type of thing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so certainly one of the really important things that we have to think about when we're adding insulation is the wiring up to date. If we have a house that's 90 years old or older, there could be knob and tube wiring in the home, and that's something that we cannot put insulation around, because that wiring was designed to be in an empty cavity so that it could give off heat. And of course, once you insulate around it, then that heat has nowhere to go, and it sometimes can cause a fire. It's generally a good idea to at different times, update things like the wiring, possibly some of the plumbing or the ductwork or the piping for the heating system might need some attention. I mean, these are all things that at different times people decide, I'm not simply going to replace, say, the fixtures in my bathroom. I actually am going to replace the pipes all the way from the basement up to that space. Certainly the time to do that would often be before you might, say, insulate all the walls or something like that, or in conjunction with such a project. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, okay. That's a great question.
All right, great. We are talking with Chad Spate. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build, and we're talking about remodeling, but we can take your other home improvement questions. So what questions do you have for him? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Mark Dwyer will be back to talk about early greens and cool season annuals, adding fragrance to your garden, and the latest developments in compact shrubs. That's at 11 on Friday, 6 a.m. on Saturday, or you can go online anytime. And right now, we're talking about remodeling with Chad Spate. Chad, we've got Linda on the line with a question. She's in Fox Crossing. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Yes, I have a question regarding the bathtub. I've been approached by people, vendors, who say they can put this covering over the top of your existing tub, and then it goes up the walls, and it's all one piece. Is that a good option, or is it just too flimsy?
Yeah. So, Linda, thanks for that question. It can be a very good way to create a new clean surface in your bathroom. And we occasionally will have a client that, based on what they're wanting to accomplish and, the budget they have, it can be a very cost-effective way to essentially have the appearance of replacing a tub without having to go through the expense and the mess of tearing out that old tub, and then having those new walls essentially adhered up around the shower area. And there are a variety of companies that do that. There are a lot of different surfaces or different looks that you can sometimes select. So it can be a very cost-effective way to give you an entirely new, refreshed tub shower area.
Thanks for that question, Linda. Now, Chad, there you can also refinish tubs, can't you? For companies
that
do that?
Yep, I'm glad you asked, because that is, you know, generally when we talk about the options for improving a tub and or the tub shower area, the least expensive approach is often to reglaze the existing tub. And that's what you're referring to. And that's often done on a cast iron tub, you know, which is the older tub that an older home would typically have. And often they'll end up getting chipped or stained. And it's a great way to give it that new bright finish. Many times the companies that do that will offer a warranty. Sometimes it's 5 years, which isn't bad really when you think about the abuse that a tub can take. And so that's another way to go. And sometimes the tile around the tub can be reglazed as well. It's essentially painting it with often a very heavy duty kind of acrylic based epoxy based paint. Often there's urethane in those products. It's a little toxic, a little smelly, but once it's cured, it can give you a very good finish to last for years.
Yeah, and it's a 1 day process too, I believe.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes, it's much quick. You know, definitely might be preferable to not having a bathroom for 4 to 6 weeks, which is what happens when we tear them apart.
So. Amen to that one, especially if you only have one. Right. Diane from Madison emailed to ask, who should she contact first regarding a kitchen remodel that needs custom cabinets? Does a contractor know about cabinet design? And do designers work with specific contractors? Where does she begin?
Yeah, sure. Well, that's a great question, and that takes us back to, you know, something we were talking about at the beginning. There are a number of approaches for Diane. So she can go to a showroom that sells kitchen cabinetry, you know, and in the Madison area or in you know, any larger metropolitan area, you're going to have numerous options. And you can go and look at cabinets. There are also a variety of remodeling companies that specialize in kitchen remodeling, and you might reach out to some of those. You know, some of those will connect you to a kitchen showroom and collaborate with that showroom. Some of them will do the design and provide the cabinets in-house. You know, so there's a very broad marketplace, and it's really, it comes down to what, you know, Diane is comfortable with, what she wants. But I would recommend, again, looking at the NARI website. Since Diane's in Madison, she can go to NARI of Madison. And if she looks under kitchen remodeling, she'll see this variety of options. There will be contractors that specialize in kitchen remodeling, and you call them up and find out how they work. Some of them will provide the design in-house. Some will collaborate. And then, you know, of course, you could look at some of the suppliers of kitchen cabinets and just go out and ask them who they might recommend, as we were talking earlier about utilizing the expertise of some of our local suppliers.
So no easy answer, but lots of options. So that's
absolutely
a good
yeah.
And
yeah.
Before I forget, we were talking about NARI a little bit earlier. If anybody wants some really good advice on what they can do, the steps of a remodel, their website, the national website, has some really good ones there. And I did put a link on our program note on our webpage. So if you go to WPR.org/Larry and you look for this show, just click on that and you'll see the link underneath, and that really very detailed, lots of information there for anyone who's thinking about remodeling. So let's go now to back to the phones. If I can move my cursor, here we go. We've got Rachel in Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. We just purchased a house that has some knob and tube wiring in it. So although the electrical has been updated, I'm wondering, what's the big deal, and do we have to remove that?
Yeah, okay, great question. So, Rachel, the issue with knob and tube wiring is that that old type of wiring is not grounded. That's one of the issues with it. And some of our modern electronics really don't like it when they don't have a properly grounded outlet to be able to plug into. So that's one issue. And another issue that we'd mentioned earlier was that you cannot insulate around that wiring. But if you don't insulate around it and you don't operate anything that draws high amperage, which is something like a fan or an air conditioner or something like that, it actually is a completely safe wiring system. It's just that a lot of the things that we use in a modern home and the ways that we tend to insulate and renovate a modern home are not compatible with it. So if you're sure that the wiring that is still there is not, you know, being impacted or utilized for the things we just mentioned, you might be okay. And then the only other caveat is that some insurance companies will require that you have knob and tube wiring removed and updated with modern grounded wiring. So I would definitely reach out to your insurance company and make sure it's not an exclusion in their coverage, because I wouldn't want a wiring, an old knob and tube wiring related fire to be a reason that your insurance would not pay to repair or replace your home. And we have seen that in the Madison area. I mean, every year it seems more and more insurance carriers are simply refusing to cover a home that has that old wiring system in it. The good news is that a licensed electrician can, you know, take care of updating that wiring, and, you know, the walls can then be repaired and you'll be good to go.
Great. Thank you so much for that question, Rachel, and good luck with your old house. Let's go to Christina in Glenwood City. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I hope you can advise me. I have a completed bedroom. I had initially asked the contractor to insulate that bedroom, and he said there was no reason to do so. However, this bedroom is located next to a geothermal system that has an annoying hum. I'm wondering, are we able to insulate after the fact, or what advice would you give me to reduce that noise?
Yes, so I was going to ask if the reason for insulating was perhaps to deaden sound, and so you did answer that question for me, and that is often a very good reason to insulate. And it is possible to look at a variety of ways to do some sound deadening. We were just talking earlier about blowing in cellulose into the cavities, and that's probably something that could be done rather cost effectively at this point. Is it a newer home?
Christina, is it a, I'm sorry, one more time. 12 years old?
12 years old, yep.
Okay, great. So, you know, we don't have to be concerned about wiring or anything like that. So, yeah, I would recommend that possibly you have an insulation contractor or a contractor that has some specialized knowledge in doing some sound suppression or sound deadening to have a look at that, and you could most definitely improve the situation. There are also some materials that can be installed on the walls, additional layers of, say, drywall that are specifically designed to absorb sound. And some approach like that can be done as a retrofit as well. It can be done in conjunction with the insulation. So there are a variety of things that might be done if you find that the first thing you try doesn't quite get the job done.
Okay, Christina, thank you for that call and good luck to you. Sue in Green Bay, what's your question?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was going to have what we call a granny pod or a little apartment built off the side of my son's house because he cannot have an independent structure on his property. And last year we were going to do it, but the builder was so busy he could not get to it. And so we graciously said, okay, we'll wait until next summer. And of course, he couldn't do it yet, and he passed us off to another builder who he felt confident with. Well, that builder has now told us that it's going to be another $40,000, to build that. And it's a bare bones kind of apartment anyway. There are not bells and whistles. And so, you know, we said, no, we're not going to do it right now, but how long am I, is it silly for me not to go ahead? I hate to spend that extra money on that kind of thing.
Okay, Sue, that is a really good question, and I'm sure lots of people want to know that answer. But unfortunately, we have to take a short little break for the news. So just hold on, and we'll get to it real quick. We're talking about home improvement with Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build, and we'll be back with more after this look at the news. We're talking about home improvement topics today and looking a little closer at remodeling projects. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Chad Spate. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build. What questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And before we went to the news, Chad, we had Sue in Green Bay who had a question about whether or not she should be adding one of those little granny pods to her son's house. What do you think?
Yeah, so the concern about the contractor that let her know that it was going to add about $40,000 to the original estimate that she had received, I suspect that is driven by the very high and inflated lumber costs that we're seeing right now. I'll just give our listeners an example. 2 years ago, we could have purchased a sheet of half-inch CDX plywood for about $20. And today, that sheet of plywood is going from anywhere from, say, $75 to $90. So it's literally about four times the cost in just a little over a year. So it is true that some homeowners right now are deciding that their project is very adversely affected by this higher rate of lumber cost, and they might be waiting until lumber prices come down. But what we don't know, honestly, is, you know, how soon those prices might come down, whether this is just a blip or whether there's some things changing in the supply chain. There are all sorts of questions I have. I mean, we know that it's illogical that there would be some lumber mills and factories that have been disrupted by the coronavirus. There have been shutdowns and things like that that obviously reduces the supply, and that tends to have an impact on the price of things going up. It's also true that there's an extremely high demand right now. Everyone wants to do something. So probably it does make sense for some people when they do have a project that, you know, suddenly the price has really changed, they might consider delaying that project. There could be other factors, though, that are contributing to that cost. With our clients, I know today we're talking about kind of the remodeling process and how to pick a contractor. I don't know. We didn't get to talk with Sue to find out, you know, how careful of a process she had been through with her contractor. I don't know if she had been given kind of a ballpark estimate. And then once they came back and said, well, this is actually what it's going to cost to do the thing that you want to do, that might be part of what's going on there. For our clients, you know, we take them through a process of design and pricing, and we do charge for that process. But when they actually hire us to build something, they are, you know, we make a commitment to provide the thing that we say we're going to provide at the price that we are committing to charge for that. And we make sure that everyone's on the same page, and there's, you know, there aren't any changes unless someone requests a change after that point. So my question would be, you know, when exactly did the $40,000 increase come up in the process? You know, was it just a guesstimate? And then when the real pricing came through, you know, lumber pricing was part of it, but maybe there were other factors that contributed to that.
Sue, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Sue, you can go ahead and answer that question then for Chad.
Yes. Actually, the design had already been done, and we looked at it very carefully to see what maybe wasn't necessary, which we'd gotten it down to pretty much bare bones. And so then he took it back to his architect, and they, you know, they drew it up, and that's when he gave me the hammer, you know, put the hammer down, that it was going to be that much more. Just based on the cost of supplies.
Okay. Yeah. So, and what, if you don't mind, I mean, what percentage increase did that constitute?
Well, last summer it was going to be between $80,000 and $100,000. So, it went up quite a bit.
Okay.
I would say. Yeah, and you know what? And, you know, if you wish you knew the future, but we couldn't be insistent enough. Last summer, he just was, I mean, the other builder was just could not get at it. And we had to understand it was a small project compared to his homes that he was building. So
sure.
We were, you know, I didn't want to be that nasty person that somebody works with that they don't, you know, end up not liking. So
Sure. Well, it sounds like it may be a combination of factors. I mean, you know, I think maybe the builder is probably just being transparent and letting you know that certainly material costs are contributing to a higher than expected cost. But it could also be, you know, since you started with kind of a range, and then when they really sharpened the pencil and gave you that price based on an actual design, then that's, you know, what it ended up being. And I know sometimes that happens when we're working with our clients, where we're hoping something's going to be less expensive, but once all the details have been sorted out, we discover that thing that they really want is going to cost more than what we all hoped. But that's why, you know, the good news, I guess, is that, you know, now you have to decide if the thing you really want is worth doing. At least you're not sitting there halfway into the project and you've been confronted with something like this, which I find be really infuriating.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for staying with us, Sue, and thank you for that question. Chad, we had Brad in Minnesota who emailed us about these, skyrocketing lumber prices. He's wondering if metal wall studs, the code sufficient for homes and a potential alternative. What do you think about metal wall studs?
You know, that is a great question. And because we just do practically no metal construction ourselves, I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that many other commodities in building have, you know, the pricing has gone up, and yet we've had some things actually come down, which has, you know, been a little bit of a head scratcher. but I know that, you know, copper piping, for example, right now is high, but the steel in metal studs, great question. Don't know the answer, but it might be worth looking into.
Okay, great. Thank you for that, Brad. And Jamie in Algoma emailed to say that they need a roof inspection. What kind of professional should they contact for an estimate? An inspector, a roofer, or somebody altogether different?
So I would say that part of the answer to that question, it just has to do with exactly why they, you know, are wanting to have the inspection. Maybe they're just being a you know, diligent homeowner, and they, you know, kind of want to make sure that things are as they should be. Generally, when we're involved in planning for a project, we have one of our trusted roofing contractors come over and inspect the roof. And so my first suggestion would be that if they know of a roofer, or if in their area they can, you know, do a little research and find a quality roofer that would be willing to come out and inspect their roof, I would say that's the first step. If they're not feeling particularly good about that, because that's not likely to cost any money, you know, a roofer will generally come and you know, there are many good, trustworthy roofers that will come out and they'll tell you, you know, no, your roof looks fine. You know, call me in 5 to 10 years. But if they're not sure about that, or they're not able to find someone they trust, I would say contact a home inspector that would typically be someone you would contract with when you were considering buying a home, and talk to them about what they would charge to simply come out and inspect your roof, because, you know, they typically charge a pretty substantial fee to do a thorough whole house inspection. But I suspect that some of these folks would be happy to do something less than that and still be able to give their professional opinion for a reasonable cost.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jamie. Joan in Prairie du Chien called to ask about low maintenance deck material. Is it better than wood? I know it's improved quite a bit since it first came on the market. What do you think of it now, Chad?
Yeah, so we certainly have shifted to having a fair number of clients that are demanding that we put in either Trex or AZEK, TimberTech. These are brands that I trust that have been on the market for, you know, 15 to 25 years. Some of the things that were problematic with synthetic decking at the beginning have been resolved. And our experience is that these products that have been out now for 10 to 15 years are excellent in their performance. They have good skid resistance. Some of them were very slick years ago and, frankly, not very safe when they're wet or when there's ice on them. But those issues have been resolved by some of the better brands. It is true that, you know, wood decking does require a lot of ongoing maintenance. But I will also say that if you're willing to do that maintenance, you know, there is nothing like a wood you know, structure or wood materials. I mean, it's predictable and we, you know, we can repair it. We can, if there's a board that gets broken, it's almost certain that we can replace it with something similar and make it all look like it used to look. The problem with some of these synthetic products is that if one of the pieces were to be damaged, if you don't have any extra material, it's going to be hard to match it and to restore it. So that's the one thing that I still am always hesitant to just point at. I want to point
Great.
That out.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Jeff in Fox Lake. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. Hey, I have what we have is an older type farmhouse, probably close to 100 years. So it has wood siding. We're attempting to have vinyl put on. I'm wondering on the insulation, what do we need to do? One contractor just wants to put the siding and right on the original wood siding, and the other wants to take all of the wood siding off to see what we have underneath there and then put insulation on top of what's underneath there. I'm just wondering which direction you go on something like this.
Sure. Well, that's a great question, and there isn't necessarily a correct answer. There are just certain things that you probably want to be careful of. Many times we will leave the material that's on the home and go over top of it, because if that material is not significantly damaged, you know, it's not, you know, harboring insects and causing problems, it can be buried, and you know, there's less material in the landfill, and it provides a little bit of insulative qualities, and you can still add material either into the walls or onto the exterior of the walls. But different contractors have different approaches. We want to be mindful of lead paint and making sure that if there is material being removed, that the lead paint, if it's there, is being properly captured and cleaned up and disposed of, that you're not poisoning the soil all around your home. You also want to be careful that whatever insulation material is put on is not going to create a vapor barrier problem and trap moisture in the walls of your home. In our climate, the appropriate place for a vapor barrier is on the inside wall or in the middle of the wall. If you put a vapor barrier on the exterior, there are all sorts of potential problems that can happen. And there are now a growing number of materials out there that are becoming more available that make it easier to add insulation and not have to worry about having a vapor barrier on the exterior. So those would be my concerns and things to talk to the different contractors about. But ultimately, once you feel that you've got a good solution, I wish you luck with the project. It's always good to take care of an old home and make it a little bit more comfortable and energy efficient.
Okay, thanks for the call, Jeff. Appreciate that. Let's go to Jan in Viroqua. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Chad. Hi, Chad.
Hi.
I bought a house about 4 years ago and had a full home inspection done. And my one section of my house has begun to shift. And when I had the contractor come over and look at the foundation, he discovered that there is no foundation under that side of the house. It only goes down about 8 inches below ground level. It's courses stones and then two courses of cinder block. And nothing below it. Do I have the bid I got for correcting the problem is $12,000. Do I have a recourse with the inspector?
Well, so that's a great question, and probably, you know, better answered by an attorney. I would say that you may not have a recourse. There are some things that are hard to see or know. Home inspectors don't typically dig around a home to confirm that there's a foundation. And if the structure kind of disappears into the ground, there might be some things there that should have or might have led some people to ask questions. But then maybe it looks like you would expect something to look on a foundation. So, I mean, without seeing it myself, you know, it would be hard to say whether or not the individual was negligent in any way. But I suspect, unfortunately, that that's just, something now that's been discovered. And it doesn't sound like an unreasonable amount of money to rectify the problem. But I'm sorry that you're faced with that, certainly.
Okay. Thanks for that call. Let's go to an email. Thomas emailed about vermiculite. He has it in his attic, apparently, as insulation. What are some options for working around it? He said that they'd be concerned about even changing a ceiling fixture in a room in this situation.
Sure. Well, so vermiculite is a material that is in some blown-in insulation that was used at different times in homes, and we have occasionally discovered it up in attics. And like asbestos tiles, you know, vermiculite is generally assumed to have asbestos contamination. You can have it tested, but you should probably have it professionally removed to avoid this problem. And I will say that there is a settlement out there. Speaking of potential lawsuits, and there's a class action settlement that I believe is still open, and you might be able to collect some money to help offset the cost of having that vermiculite professionally removed from the attic. And of course, you know, you could have it removed in places where you might want to do some improvements. I mean, best case scenario is if it could all be removed, get it all removed. But if there's some particular areas that you know you'd like to renovate in the future or have better access to, at least those could be mitigated. And hopefully you're able to get some of these funds. And I'd have to look into the information on that. It's not coming to mind, that settlement, but we could possibly get that information to the listener.
Okay. And where would he be able to contact you, Chad? You have a website, right?
He could reach out to us through our website, chadsdesignbuild.com, and I'm Chad at chadsdesignbuild.com. So he could
How
just
original.
Send me an email.
Took you a while to come up with that one, I'll bet.
It did, yeah.
We appreciate that. And Thomas, good luck. Make sure you get that checked out. Very important, that whole asbestos problem. Well, we're kind of winding up here, Chad. I just wanted to thank you for being with us again. We'll be back in a couple of months, right?
Yes. Thanks, Jill. It's always a pleasure being here.
Okay. And don't work too hard.
It was great. Oh, thank you. You as well. And let's hope the summer keeps on coming here. The weather's
absolutely
been great.
We love it. We've been talking with Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build. He'll be back to help you with your home improvement questions on July 8th. Tomorrow at this time, Mark Dwyer will be back with us on Garden Talk. We're going to look at cool season annuals, how to add fragrance to your garden, and the latest developments in compact shrubs. All that starting tomorrow at 11 on the Ideas Network. And just by way of full disclosure, we should mention that Chad's Design Build is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well.